First, it's our weekly look at the top stories in national politics. We may be getting closer to a coronavirus stimulus relief package in Congress. The Electoral College voted Monday to affirm Joe Biden and Kamala Harris as president-elect and vice president-elect. And early voting is underway in the runoff elections for Georgia Senate races that could change the power dynamic in the Senate. You can join in at 800-642-1234. When and if Congress passes a new stimulus measure, what would you like to see in it? Should there be more direct payments to individuals? If so, how big? What about the return of enhanced federal unemployment payments? What would those look like? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also email ideas@WPR.org. Francesca Chambers is the White House correspondent for McClatchy. Francesca, welcome back to Central Time.
Thank you. It's always a pleasure to be on with you.
Well, every week, Francesca, a stimulus deal is just around the corner. How around the corner is it right now?
Well, with the holidays nearing, it could be really just around the corner. Lawmakers never like to go back home for a recess, particularly around the holidays, without having getting one of these deals done. Now, they did leave for August recess without getting a deal done. But the Christmas time, it's a little bit different, and it does seem like they could be close to a deal that would be close to $900 billion on a stimulus package.
What are some of the key elements that it looks like everybody is agreed on right now?
So one of the key elements that there had been a dispute between Republicans and Democrats on was those weekly jobless benefits that you mentioned, the enhanced unemployment for federal unemployment. Republicans had not wanted to keep it as high as it had been, and Democrats had not wanted to pass a deal that didn't have it in there. So what they're talking about now is $300 a week in jobless benefits, which is a number that in the past the White House has been supportive of as well.
And how about direct payments to everybody, I assume, under a certain income level? I've seen some Democrats and some Republicans in the Senate making a case for it. Where does that stand in the negotiations?
Well, in the deal that they're looking at now, that would be at roughly $600 per person. And the other thing that we didn't get to yet was the money for state and local aid, which had been a big thing for Democrats. Currently, that's not part of what is being negotiated. And Republicans, on the other hand, wouldn't be able to get the sort of protections for businesses that they had pushed hard for, including Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell. But again, I can't help but stress that, like you said, there have been so many times that they've been close to a deal. It's really hard to know what will be in a final package.
Who is in charge of negotiations right now? Who is meeting with whom?
Well, the White House had been involved in this, and Treasury Secretary Steve Mnuchin, as well as White House Chief of Staff Mark Meadows. But right now, the way that it seems is that the top congressional leaders, Pelosi, McConnell, Schumer, Kevin McCarthy, are the ones who are really hammering out the details of what we're seeing right now.
What kind of deadlines are they up against? I know there have been, they needed to pass spending bills by a certain time. I think they just bumped that back by a week. The unemployment enhanced benefits are on a timeline here. What is making the clock tick maybe a little faster right now, apart from the Christmas vacation, than it has in the past?
Well, that is a big part of it, though. Certainly, they don't want to go break for the Christmas holidays, right, without getting Americans who've been unemployed that enhanced benefit or some other form of a direct payment, like you said. And another key thing here is, of course, that there is two outstanding Senate runoff elections in Georgia that will take place on January 5th. And I hate to suggest that politics is at play here in any way, but it is certainly something that's on the minds for both sides.
Let's bring on a caller at 800-642-1234. Charlie is with us in Milwaukee. Charlie, hi.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I'd like your guest to talk about the fact that there are several states that have not managed their state budgets very well, particularly, Illinois, California, New York, New Jersey. They have overspent, in Illinois in particular, on their pensions, and they're trying to use this crisis and the crisis money to bail them out. Does your guest think that that's a possibility? And is there any type of reform that if they do get money for the state governments, that they would put in some reforms to prevent them from this ever happening again?
Charlie, thanks for the call. That's been an objection I know raised, Francesca, by some Republicans.
That is an objection that has been raised by more than some Republicans, many Republicans serving in Congress right now, is and the President of the United States, of course, too, who would have to sign this legislation. So it very much matters what the President is willing to agree to. And by the way, we don't really know what the President would sign. The White House hasn't committed to signing anything specifically when it comes to this. So with regards to that, as to whether or not it could be hinged to some sort of reforms, that's not something that I've heard about, but certainly the issue of that money and the way the state governments and the local aid is something that's not in the current deal that is being negotiated on Capitol Hill, at least as of this afternoon.
And the idea, I think, was this was going to replace money that states and local governments lost in local tax revenue because of the economic decline. It wouldn't have just gone to the states, Charlie mentioned, even when it was the case was being made for it, right?
But the other way that some Republicans, by the way, have looked at this is tying the aid specifically to something like first responders or education, those sorts of issues for the states in order to get it into the areas where they really want it to go. So that part had been talked about in the past, but it is unclear if the money would be tied to something like that moving forward.
Talking to Francesca Chambers, White House correspondent for McClatchy, looking at some of the top stories in national politics. Back to your calls now. Jeff is with us in Superior. Hey, Jeff.
Yes, good afternoon. I'm really glad this is happening for our country in a bipartisan fashion. I think it's overdue. But if you recall when Dick Cheney was vice president, he once said deficits don't matter because the Federal Reserve Bank loans money to the United States Treasury. So if we ever default or whatever, we basically owe ourselves, and Obama said that too. But I wanted to make a point. I think that if Trump had gotten this done before the election, he could have simply said to the American people, look, I'll pay for this. I'll pay for it in my next term. And he might have persuaded people to, like, you know, go big or go home. You know, the more you give money into the economy, the better we do, you know, in terms of cash flow.
Jeff, thanks a lot for the call. I've definitely seen people speculate, Francesca, what would have been the impact if this had been passed before the election? Some people have argued it hurt Democrats, saying maybe Nancy Pelosi got blamed for a deal not coming through. Others saying it might have hurt President Trump and his reelection bid.
It's tough to read too much into the election, though, because if you look at, as you mentioned, House Speaker Nancy Pelosi and the Democrats and the seats that they lost in the House of Representatives, that's obviously not the same outcome as you had with the presidential election. So which side did it really hurt? It is tough to say, but certainly neither side wants to run that risk as they head into those Georgia runoff elections, which are oh so important to both sides because they will determine which party controls the United States Senate in the next legislative term.
Well, let's turn to that Georgia runoff. You've touched on it a couple times, Francesca. Again, the Senate at stake here. If Democrats can win both, then they have the vice president-elect with a tie-breaking vote. They get the Senate. If they fall short at either one, they don't. So a lot at stake here. What are you watching in Georgia right now?
Well, we are talking about it a lot here, at least in Washington, because of the control of the U.S. Senate. And one thing that we're watching right now is the early vote. It began on Monday, December 14th in Georgia. And the early vote is an area that Republicans know that they need to improve. They also need to improve the mail voting, absentee voting by mail in this election. In the election that took place, the presidential election, it was the mail vote where they just could not keep up with it. And so Republicans now realize that they've made a mistake and they've learned a lesson, as one source told us, and they are focusing on this heavily. They believe they need to bank about 1 million votes, another source said, before the Christmas holidays in order to be successful in this Senate race. So that's really a marker to consider as we move ahead.
I know it was a concern for Republicans in some states leading up to the November election that President Trump was discouraging, in effect, the mail-in vote. Even among their own voters, they were worried. Is this an about-face? Is this a tough sell for them to talk to say, hey, no, voters, we got that wrong. We do want you to vote early.
Well, another thing they're emphasizing is the in-person early vote if voters feel more comfortable with that. But the thing that they're really cognizant of, going back to the Christmas holiday, is they're very concerned that interest will drop off after Christmas between the Christmas holidays and the January 5th runoff, and that if they cannot get voters out on January 5th, because believe it or not, even in Georgia, there can be snowstorms, particularly in the northern part, they don't want to find themselves in a situation where they did not bank enough votes early on, and then they don't have the election day turnout that they had hoped for.
We're talking to Francesca Chambers, White House correspondent for McClatchy. It's our weekly look at the latest stories in national politics. You could join in at 800-642-1234. Coming up, President-elect Biden and his cabinet appointments and the Electoral College vote and more Republicans, including Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell, saying, yes, President-elect Biden is President-elect Biden. What are your thoughts on those stories? Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. We'll continue the conversation coming up on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Barrett. We pick up our talk now with White House correspondent Francesca Chambers from McClatchy, looking at some of the top stories in national politics. On Monday, Electoral College electors voted, handing a more formal victory in effect to Joe Biden and Kamala Harris. Some Republican lawmakers who had been quiet about it have started speaking up now. Here's a clip of Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell speaking on the Senate floor yesterday.
Yesterday, electors met in all 50 states. So as of this morning, our country has officially a president-elect and a vice president-elect. Many millions of us had hoped the presidential election would yield a different result. But our system of government has processes to determine who will be sworn in on January the 20th. The Electoral College has spoken. So today I want to congratulate President-elect Joe Biden. The President-elect is no stranger to the Senate. He's devoted himself to public service for many years. I also want to congratulate the Vice President-elect, our colleague from California, Senator Harris. Beyond our differences, all Americans can take pride that our nation has a female Vice President-elect for the very first time.
Francesca, given the unusual nature of our post-election period this year, how big a deal is it to hear this from the Senate Majority Leader?
Well, it is in that context, particularly since President Trump responded to that by saying, quote, too soon to give up. Republican Party must finally learn to fight. People are angry, end quote. So it really shows a break between where President Trump and his team are and where the Senate Majority Leader is, who I know you hate it when I keep bringing it up. He has a different thing he's focused on right now, which is that outstanding election in Georgia.
You can keep that's the big deal. You can keep going to Georgia all you want, Francesca. So have more Republicans in the Senate and other prominent Republicans followed Senator McConnell's lead here in acknowledging the outcome of the election?
They have. And a key one here is Missouri Senator Roy Blunt, a Republican who heads the committee in Congress that's in charge of the inauguration. So he has also acknowledged this and is moving forward now on the inauguration. He says they will deal with Vice President Biden as president-elect.
Now let's move on to that president-elect, Francesca, and he's working on his cabinet picks. Now you have a new piece out looking at one that has not been announced yet. Let's start there, education.
Yes, education secretary is one that hasn't come out yet, but it's being hotly watched by folks. There's questions over what kind of a teacher Biden will appoint, because he said he will definitely be appointing someone who is a teacher. Is it someone in higher education? Is it someone who's in K-12? But the piece today looks at how there are higher education groups primarily focused on Black higher education, and they are pushing for North Carolina Rep. Alma Adams for the position. But the sources that I'm hearing from have said that prior to this, she is not someone who had been under discussion. Part of the reason for that is because Democrats don't want to take any additional people out of the House of Representatives right now. We just talked about the 2020 election and the results of it. They certainly don't want a slimmer majority, but they also do not want to have to deal with too many special elections. They already will have to deal with at least the one for Cedric Ridgeman, who's joining the administration. And so they're really not eager to add on more to that. But she does have the support of the NAACP, who issued a statement to us saying she would be an exceptional choice.
So we'll watch for that announcement. Now, we have some more picks made, including the transportation secretary. This one is official now. It's been announced by the president-elect, Pete Buttigieg, a former mayor in Indiana. Talk about that choice. Not somebody necessarily associated with transportation policy.
But he is someone who was expected to be chosen for some sort of a cabinet role in the Biden administration. Joe Biden has said he's very fond of Pete Buttigieg and he reminds him of his late son. And he was someone who was very helpful to the president-elect in his presidential campaign. So the question really at a certain point was, what cabinet position does he put Pete Buttigieg in? Transportation secretary is an interesting one because he had mostly been thought of for something like Veterans Affairs, and he had been said to want something like United Nations ambassador. But today it did again emerge that he would be in the transportation secretary position. Another reason this is of interest and importance within Democratic groups and progressive groups is because he is young. He is someone who's considered that he could run for president again. And that is certainly something that you're going to want to keep an eye on, particularly if you are the vice president-elect Kamala Harris, who seemingly also would want to run for president again in the future.
We are talking to Francesca Chambers, White House correspondent for McClatchy, looking at some of the top stories in national politics, looking now at President-elect Biden and his picks for his cabinet and other important positions in his administration. Former Michigan Governor Jennifer Granholm looks like she's going to go to the energy secretary post. A lot of appointments related to concerns about the environment and climate change. Talk about that one in particular, energy secretary.
Yes, she is someone that Republicans, of all the people that Republicans could potentially oppose, she's someone who's emerging as a little bit of a flashpoint based on the clashes she's had in the past with Republicans. And certainly they're all going to be Democrats that he's going to appoint, but there are some who are drawing more ire from Republicans than the others. And that's always something that the presidents face. President Trump obviously had some folks who created flashpoints as well. And by the way, they also in cases made it through. So that's not to say that anyone who has become a flashpoint Republicans won't make it through. But certainly Joe Biden will have an easier time getting his cabinet nominees through if Democrats have control over the Senate.
And that takes us back to Georgia, I guess.
I didn't mean to.
That's okay. I mean, that looms over everything. I think going back to Georgia again and again makes that point. How much of a difference does it make if Democrats pick up those two seats in the Senate versus if they don't?
Well, I'll put it the way that former President Barack Obama did. And when he was campaigning in Georgia recently, virtually, but when he was campaigning, he said that the entire Biden-Harris agenda rests on these two Senate seats. So that is why you cannot overstate the importance of those Senate seats. And for those who are unfamiliar, the way that it would work is that the Senate, if Democrats picked up those two seats, would be 50-50. But because Kamala Harris would be vice president, then they would typically have control over the Senate because the vice president is technically the president of the Senate. So it's not a large majority there, but again, just enough to give them more control over the United States Senate.
Let's bring on another caller now. Nate is with us in Milwaukee. Nate, hi.
Hi, thank you. I thought there was also another interesting bit of history that I didn't expect to live through, but did. And that is, I think this is the first time a sitting president actually tried to steal my ballot, since I am from Milwaukee. And mine is one of the thousands that probably would have been tossed out. And why I think as much as I did pay attention to the Electoral College vote that was in the news, I also kept looking at the court cases and the details in that. And I think the upside of this is that the steal was stopped in that it was aimed at people's ballots.
Nate, thanks a lot for the call. Most court cases done now, Francesca. A couple, I think, federal appeals still potentially active here in Wisconsin and other states. A hearing in the Senate led by Wisconsin Senator Ron Johnson. But do you think, Francesca, most of the stories that Nate's following when it comes to the courts and attempts to change the outcome of the election are pretty much done at this point?
Most of those that were before the courts, as you noted, are have been dismissed at this point or done, or as you said, and importantly, the piece of the court case, I guess, that they wanted to get in front of the Supreme Court, they were not able to do that. The Supreme Court said it did not have standing. That's the one that where they tried to stop the Electoral College vote from taking place in the way that it did. And it, of course, has done that by now. And that would have been the key one. And that is when you also saw Republicans like Mitch McConnell coming out and saying that Joe Biden is the president-elect.
Thanks for that call, Nate. In our last minute or so, Francesca, there's still another month and, 4 days or so of a Trump administration. What are you watching for from the White House over the next handful of weeks?
Well, when it comes to President Trump's legacy, there are questions around that. Anything else that the White House would potentially like to get done, even if they're not saying so publicly, that certainly there could be some movement on some of those issues privately. Those will be key things as we move ahead. But of course, with President Trump, you can never know what he might do, executive orders that he might sign, to be honest. So we do have the Christmas holidays coming up here soon. And so I do expect there to be a little bit of a drop off. But, you know, in years past, he has even taken questions from reporters on Christmas Day and made some news. So stay tuned.
Francesca, thanks again for joining us today.
Thank you so much. Have a great one. Happy holidays.
You too. We've been talking to Francesca Chambers, White House correspondent for McClatchy. We talked to her for our Week in Washington, looking at several top political stories, including the Georgia Senate runoff elections and President-elect Biden's latest cabinet announcements.